the Clear Path Podcast presented by Vendetta Sports Media. This is your host, Jacob McCormick, and I just had a few quick hitters here for you. This is going to be a really short episode here on a Monday. Just wanted to get go over a couple of things that have been going on in the NBA, and hoping to record a more in-depth kind of discussion tonight or tomorrow morning with somebody here at Vendetta to get a little more analysis and discussion ahead of the trade deadline on Thursday, which is, I think, three Eastern on Thursday afternoon. So I wanted to run through a couple things that happened over the weekend. Last time we talked, I believe we discussed a few of the Tyreek Evans trade scenarios, and also what happened right after we recorded. I believe posted on, it was actually the day the website launched. It was the Nikola Mirotic trade, which that was between the New Orleans Pelicans and the Chicago Bulls. Something that I had actually said that, and you know, per reports online, that the trade had fallen apart due to the reluctance of the New Orleans Pelicans to guarantee that second year option on Mirotic for $12.5 million. But you know, Thursday it changed. They decided to guarantee that, moving the trade forward, which you know, the meat of it included New Orleans sending back the Omer Asik contract, Tony Allen, and Jameer Nelson, as well as a top five protected first round pick to Chicago for this upcoming season. Which I think for Chicago, you look at it, this is a long term move. Omer Asik's the second highest contract on their team, next to Robin Lopez, which is still a pretty value for him around that young core. And they're moving forward with players like Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, you know, Denzel Valentine, Bobby Portis, you know, players like that that are on value contracts. I mean, LaVine is due to be a restricted free agent this offseason, but. And we'll talk about this later with another player, but the restricted free agent market, you know, it's predicted to be a little bit more slim than in years past. So we don't know if we're going to see max contract offers for these kind of middling, you know, younger mid-20-year-old players like Zach LaVine, who a year or two ago you would think, okay, this guy's probably going to get close to a max extension, or you know, he's probably going to get north of 15. You know, close to $20 million a year on the market, at least, you know, with the option to match that. So we'll see what happens there. But I think it's a good move by the Bulls moving forward, trading an asset like Mirotic that they had some internal strife with Bobby Portis before the season started. He played well for them, capitalizing on his contract, or he's capitalizing on his play, trading that contract away and getting some value for it to add to that young core, because, you know, after this season, you have one more year left on that Asik contract, and then you'll be done. And that kind of sets you up to, you know, 2019, 2020 to be contenders in that season. Not contenders, but, you know, major players for trade market and free agents. So I like the move by them. Also, they add another first-round pick, which, coupled with their own, which is going to be a lottery pick, which many thought would be a top five. It's kind of, they've played their way out of the lock of being a top three pick, but still an outside chance they have a top five type of luck in the lottery. Then with this Pelicans pick, with it being top five protected, you have a pretty good shot here. I mean, I think the Pelicans have only dropped down to seventh in the West right now since the DeMarcus Cousins injury. You know, they were kind of back and forth. It's this 6, 7, and 8. It is really close in the West, so not too much there. But and they haven't dropped off that much since the losing Cousins. But there's the possibility that they regress to their play in the past, with Anthony Davis being the kind of the cornerstone there, and they miss the playoffs, or they're in that 9 to 10 to 8, you know, 8, 9, 10 seed range. And if you luck out and get a second lottery pick in what is, you know, believed to be a pretty loaded deep draft, I think that's just, you know, adding two more picks that are, you know, going to be on your books for, you know, the next 4 to 5 years under, you know, value contracts, especially late lottery picks. It's just a really good value for them, because basically all you're doing is taking on the $11 million for next season. That's the only thing that's a negative perceived for the Bulls, which still, you know, as we talked about, you know, best case scenario next year, they're kind of like a team like the Sixers this year, you know, playing around for that 7 to 8 playoff seed. I think that's a good spot for them. So I think it's a great move by the Bulls. Add some more young players to that core. Hoiberg's really shown that he can coach up a team, given some freedom here without those older veterans on the team now. So I like the move for the Bulls. Just wanted to recap that real quick since that happened kind of before the Super Bowl weekend started. So swept away a little bit. But other than that, there was a couple of other rumors that kind of surfaced over the weekend. Marcus Smart was a name that, he recently, I think he had a laceration on his hand. He's missing a couple weeks for the
Celtics.
He's been a player that started on occasion for them this year when Kyrie was out. Him and Terry Rozier kind of being those second and third point guards. But the way Brad Stevens and the Celtics play, they play 3 to 4 point guards anyway. Mix them up with 3-point guard lineups at one time. A lot of lineups with 2-point guards. So he plays a lot of minutes, and he's been a value for them as far as his defensive versatility and his, kind of ability to guard almost 1 through 5 in a way. But his shooting has been well below average. He's below 30% 3-point shooter, but he still takes a pretty good he takes about almost 5 a game, which, for a player that shoots like, what is it here? He shoots 29% from 3, and you're taking 5 threes a game. It's not really what you want, but they've kind of let him have his free reign because of the way he actually, is a plus when he's on the court because of everything else he does. But over the weekend, it was surfaced that, he was available in a trade for possibly a first-round pick or, depending on what the teams would offer. And it kind of got people talking. Anytime the Celtics are involved in a rumor, it's been, it's the hot news of the day. But I think this is a trade where if I was the Celtics, it's kind of a situation like when they traded Isaiah Thomas last year. And a lot of people were saying, this guy's poured his heart out. They're going to have to pay him in the offseason. He's done so much for the city and all this stuff, and it's going to be kind of a loyalty guarantee for that max contract in the offseason or close to a max. Well, they went ahead and traded that, or this in this upcoming offseason would have been the year. But they kind of avoided that by trading him to the Cavs and picking up Kyrie Irving, who's already on a deal. And they've been scrutinized for that. And Isaiah Thomas is criticized them for that. But if you look at what they did, and this kind of follows the same, it's a different situation, but it's the same situation with Marcus Smart, is that you have a player in Smart who's approaching restricted free agency, who a lot of people thought, similar to Zach LaVine, like we just talked about, was going to get, a very large contract north of probably $15 million a year in free agency, and that he was going to be, a really, really sought after, and that the Celtics were going to be hard-pressed to match that contract and bring back a crowd favorite and a guy who's really a good role player and kind of glue guy for them as far as what they do defensively. Well, I'll actually like – I'm not a huge fan of Marcus Smart the player, just because of his offensive kind of drawbacks. Defensively, you can't deny it, but it's something similar to – it makes me wonder if his success in the system is due to Brad Stevens. Like, we've seen players like Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder suffer from, not being in that system this year. I'm not saying that's across the board. It's all, if you're with Brad, you're good. If you're not with Brad, you're not good. But playing a player like Marcus Smart, close to north of $15 to $20 million a year to be a player, that currently averages 10 points a game and like 4 assists a game with shooting below 30% from 3, are you going to be able to use him defensively and make him be a net positive on your team like the Celtics are? Like, he fits the scheme they're on. He's a value contract still in his rookie contract, so he makes sense for them. But does he make sense for a team that's looking to add a player at the deadline or to trade an asset for? Definitely not, in my opinion, definitely not a first-round pick, because I just feel you're going to be in a spot where, you're either going to have to match what he gets next year or or hope that the offers don't come, which leads to another conversation that I do think that it's going to be a lot cheaper than people think in the offseason, similar to like Jermichael Green last year with the Grizzlies. He wasn't rumored to get the type of money that, a Smart or a LaVine would get. But still, the offers didn't come in. His qualifying offer was sitting there. He ended up signing for like a 2-year deal. I think it was like $8 million a year. Something very, very reasonable for a team that was kind of strapped by the cap. And they really waited him out. So I think something similar like that would happen to Marcus. And while I'm not a fan of the player, like I said, I could see why a team might want to go after him. because if you, let's say you gamble, maybe you're able to wait out the Celtics and give them something at the end of the deadline that's not it's not maybe like a second round pick or expiring that maybe they want to add to their core to compete this year. You know, maybe that's a deal that sounds good to you because you're like, okay, I'll get him for the rest of the season. You know, he's a project as far as his offensive output. But if we're able to get him on, let's say, a 3 to 4 year deal, you know, averaging around $7 to $8 million, and you're able to keep his bird rights in the offseason and match any contract that he gets, I think that's a pretty good option for a team that, you know, maybe a team that's not in the playoffs this year, but is looking for something to spark them. So I don't think that's something that teams should throw away just because of his output, even though my criticisms kind of contradict themselves. But I do think that there's value just based on, you know, he's a player that's contributed on a playoff team for multiple seasons in a row, and he's shown that he can be played in crunch time and whether he's touching the ball or not. And so I think that's up to the coach. If the coach – I think it has to be a good – somebody like a Rick Carlisle or somebody like that. I'm not saying that he'd be traded to the Mavs, but a coach like that, a coach like Brad Stevens that really controls that team and controls that defensive and the defensive scheme and knows how to put their players in good situations. So I think that's something to look out after approaching the deadline, because I think Ainge wants to make a move. You know, he's been rumored with Tyreek Evans, and you know, I think the Grizzlies are, and I've seen Celtics fans on Twitter, you know, they're the funniest ones to look at in the trade deadline. Like, I saw a buddy today post, you know, to his Celtics followers, he's a writer for the Celtics, Celtics blog, you know, post, you know, would you accept a trade of Marcus Morris, Abdel Nader, and a second round pick for Tyreek Evans and Wayne Selden? And I know when you get into local stuff like this, a team like the Grizzlies, that's more of a regional coverage team, not much national. You know, people are like, oh, that may sound great. You have a Marcus Morris established player, second-round pick, you know, and then a middling Abdel Nader. But when you look at it, that's such a Celtics trade because of the fact that they don't want to give up anything of value that they value for something that two players that are valuable to a team like Memphis, a player that's on a two-year deal on a very, very valuable contract, and Wayne Selden, who's shown since he came back from injury this year that he can hit the three consistently and be a ball handler slash, you know, a rim attacker and really kind of mesh with that team and that young group that they have, plus a Tyreek Evans who's been I wouldn't say garnering. I mean, they want a first-round pick for him. I wouldn't say it's consensus that that's what he's going to get. But, you know, none of those players is what somebody like Memphis is going to go after, especially, and then just a second round pick for him. I'd rather trade Tyreek just for a second by itself or 2 seconds. So I think you see stuff like that with Boston, and you know they're rumored. You know, Danny Ainge is always rumored to want players. He leaks. He's probably the most notorious, the most common front office leaker to the media. It's out there because they're always in the rumors, and you find that out because he's very talkative with the local media, I would assume. So as far as that goes, I don't see Evans being somebody that the Celtics land just because of Memphis kind of set on what they want. And I see Danny Ainge as being kind of a master. I mean, they have a better front office than Memphis, obviously. And I don't see him caving on a conservative offer when he probably doesn't think the Grizzlies have what they want in hand. So I don't see them making a move. If we wanted to talk about Evans real quick, just as the rumors, I mean, that's going to probably heat up more in the following week, and we'll try to go more in depth on that. But I think more likely that he ends up on a team like Denver or Philadelphia, who has more recently won some games and been hot and seen that, you know, like Denver beating Golden State the other night and a buzzer beater. And that was the Thunder and a buzzer beater. Then they beat Golden State the next day. A team like that who's like, oh, we're here. You know, we actually can compete in the playoffs. Let's shoot for that 6 seed or that 5 seed. And you know, they're going to look at, oh, we definitely need a more veteran ball handler that can score in multiple ways and hold down that second unit. I think that's a team that's going to end up ponying something. Because there's always teams that you don't consider trade options for players that end up giving you more than you thought closer to the deadline because you hold out and it always defers to win now in this league. And a team like Denver that's been out of the playoffs for several years in a row and that's starred for that, and they have a fan base that's on fire for them, they're going to end up, you know, odds are they're going to be willing to part with something that they wouldn't today, but they in 3 days from now, they probably will. So you have to hold out for that. I think Denver, Philly's a more likely destination. Like I said, we'll go more in depth on that in the next pod. But the last thing I wanted to hit on real quick, as far as news goes, after covering, you know, Meritage, Marcus Smart, and Tyreek a little bit, was the news that came out today. It's nothing that's like really ground shaking or league shaking. What is interesting to me, Willie Hernan Gomez for the New York Knicks, who's asked to be traded because he's basically been lost on the bench this year. A player that last year he played 72 games for, started 22 of them for the Knicks, averaged like 8-7. You know, showed some offensive versatility, above average free throw shooter. He really was lost on the bench this year with some of the players they have, and you know, with Cantor becoming a more consistent player and Kylo Quinn being there, he's kind of just been lost. He's only played in 25 games. He's averaging like, I think it's below 10 minutes in those games that he plays. It's nothing of note across the board. Still like 4-3 as far as the points and rebounds go. But I think it's a player that I doubt he gets traded just because he has no leverage. He's on a 2 more years left on a rookie deal, and that there's going to be teams that are interested in him. They may be able to extract somewhat of an asset from a team that is looking for a player like him that can come in and contribute right now. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can get, I mean, if I was them, and if the thing is, if he's not in their plans in the immediate future, get a late first is even remote. I'm not even going to entertain that idea, but maybe you can get a couple of seconds for him. Maybe you can get a second round pick from a lowly team, or a second round pick that, you know, is looked to be at the top half of the second, and plus a guy on a contract that's not like the best. Maybe you can, you know, trade him to a team like, you know, like Portland, and get something that they're willing to dump, or a team like Cleveland, you know, is always looking for everybody right now. You know, a team that's looking for a center. You know, there's a couple of them out there. Maybe you can, a team that's like, okay, well, 2 years from now, I can see him being my starter, and you can get something a little extra out of them. So I think that's an interesting move that you see a player like Hernan Gomez, who he's not a household name, and you know, being asked to be traded at this point, it's kind of weird for a player that's that young. But it kind of shows you that he's just not happy with his role there in New York. So that's an interesting, maybe there's a scenario where, you know, the Knicks wouldn't have been involved. Maybe it's a three-team deal where he ends up being a piece that's traded to help match salary, and that the Knicks wouldn't have previously considered because they didn't foresee moving him. But now that they're like, well, maybe we want to get this out of our locker room, maybe they jump into a Cavs and Clippers, or Cavs and Blazers, or Cavs and anybody trade to be the third team that makes everything work and takes a little bit of salary back for some assets. So I think that's something to watch. Like I said, we're going to go into a little bit more depth on a couple of these things over the course of the week with some guests. So just wanted to hit a couple of quick hitters for you to give you something today, since you know, the week is heating up and everybody's got the Super Bowl hangover, so they want something to some content out there. But but yeah, guys, so look for some more stuff coming out from us. I'm going to try to record more tonight. But this is your episode 4 of the Clear Path NBA podcast with me, Jacob. So we'll see you. Peace.